Okay. Not, oh, there, finally. Okay, here we go.
B-A-T-F I-R-S C-I-A and F-B-I F-D-A and F-C-C A-D-L and K-G-B. Now I know my ABCs, all of which spell tyranny.
Jewry. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Eurofolk Radio, Bloodlines, seventh of January, 2018. And today we're going to be starting a new series on the languages of the Aryans, the language tree of the Aryans, which does include Hebrew, folks. You have been misled by academia, which has been misled by the Jews, in believing that Hebrew is not an Aryan language. We're going to dispel that myth in great detail in this series. How are you doing this morning, Pastor Steve?
I'm doing just fine. Let's get the definition of Aryan out of the way. Aryan means noble.
Uh-huh.
Most people don't. But I saw in the joint. We're Aryans.
They're not very noble.
they had no nobility.
Absolutely.
About them.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them that claimed to be Aryans in the joint were mixed breeds.
Yes, they were. Well, they're wannabes.
I mean, people take a word and run with it.
Right?
The same way with a...
like Gentile.
It's not in Scripture.
That's right. It's not in Scripture. But we have some interesting...
It means not a citizen. It doesn't mean anything else.
Right. Well, it means from the Hebrew goy, which means nation, and the Greek ethnos also means nation. It doesn't mean non-Jew, never, or non-Israel. Never had such a meaning.
He said to Abraham, I will make of you a great goy.
Yeah, right.
Abraham is supposed to be their father, and he's a great goy. Does that make them goyim?
Yeah, so if the Jews say the goyim are non-Israelites, well, then I guess the Jews are non-Israelites.
Right? Well, guess what? The goyim know.
Yes, the goyim know.
The goyim know.
And they're waking up. The goyim are waking up.
The goyim know. That song,
right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the one great persuasion of the internet, is that we can reach people that we've never been able to reach before.
Right.
And they're catching on, you know, sometimes from our influence, sometimes just on their own, just observing what Jews do and what they claim to be. There's a vast crevasse between what they say and what they do. And they say, are these people the Israelites of the Bible? Is that possible? Anyway,
they're
a great show. Great show by Michael and Pastor Dan. And
absolutely.
I
had it cranked.
Blasting out the residents, right? Okay, I just want to quickly, because Andy has an interview scheduled this week. I believe it's on Thursday. I'm not sure. With Monica Schaefer and her husband. And if you haven't heard yet, Monica Schaefer, she put out this video called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. In other words, she's a Holocaust denier now. She lives in Canada. And she went over to Germany to attend the trial, just to be in the audience of the trial of Sylvia Stoltz, who is another German lady who has been accused of Holocaust denial. She's a lawyer. She's the lawyer who defended, the American, German-American who?
Erich Zundel?
Ernst Zundel, yes. She defended Ernst Zundel.
Ernst Zundel,
and then the German government prosecuted her. All right? So she went to Germany to attend the trial of Sylvia Stoltz, and then she got arrested. She got picked up right in the courtroom. They put handcuffs on her and escorted her out.
They were laying in wait for her.
Yes. And so I'm in the chat room on my laptop because for some reason my main computer won't allow me to enter the chat room. And so what I'd like you to do, Pastor Steve, is share this link with everybody. And this is the Monica Schaefer story.
All right.
Okay. So if you put that in the chat room, and I'll just start reading from it. Glaring hypocrisy. On June 17, 2016, Monica Schaefer, a native-born Canadian citizen of German parents, posted the above brief video to YouTube entitled, "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And it's been a big thing on the internet, really big. Yesterday, January 3rd, Monica was arrested in Munich, Germany for quote-unquote hate speech. "We've just received via email the below open letter from Alfred Schaefer, Monica's brother, and Andy's interview scheduled for this week is with Monica and Alfred." So this was apparently recorded before Monica left for Germany.
I tried to get to the link, but now there's a picture up there, and the link thing is gone, so I can't type it.
Oh, really? Well, you don't need to type
it. Yeah, it's a pic. Well,
yeah, copy and paste.
Two different computers.
You got two computers also. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, so it's glaringhypocrisy.com. So you can go to that website, glaringhypocrisy.com/Monica, and that should take you right to this article. All right. Maybe somebody in the chat room can find it and post it.
Okay. Just a second.
All right. So we're publishing the letter, whole of Alfred's letter verbatim with this express permission, his express permission. And I'm just going to read a few words of it here. "Dear friends, Monica Schaefer was arrested on January 3rd, 2018 in the very heart of Holocaust country while attending, as an observer, the bizarre Inquisition hearings against the courageous Sylvia Stoltz." I'm going to pronounce it in German. Stoltz. Actually, that means proud. "This trial was for illegal words that Sylvia Stoltz had spoken at the Anti-Censorship Coalition, AZK, in Germany, in Switzerland, sorry, in 2012. So, for words that Sylvia spoke 5 years ago in another country, Sylvia Stoltz is on trial. The twisting, nonsensical accusations of the Inquisition was beyond bizarre. What the snake that calls itself the state prosecutor did will be something that will amuse future generations when studying the witch trials of 2018. 45 minutes into the Inquisition, the state prosecutor snake called for a surprise break, which was then used to arrest my courageous sister Monica. The only thing Monica did was watch quietly as the Inquisition was dealing with Sylvia Stoltz. These people have us under close observation and figured it was a good opportunity to demonstrate their power and intimidate us." Okay? So this is what happens to you folks if you deny the hoax.
Well, it's not intimidating anybody. What it's doing is really ticking people off.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, dig a hole. Dig a hole. You're digging your own grave.
Every time the Jews do something like this, they anger a lot of innocent people and their friends and relatives. Okay?
Well, so, when it hits, brother, it's not just going to be in the United States. It's going to be worldwide.
Mm-hmm. I have half a mind.
The whole world is sick of these parasites.
I have a half a mind to go to Germany and do what Monica did and see if the Germans will arrest an American citizen. Okay, let's see if they would dare to do that. So, unfortunately, Canada does not have free speech laws. Okay, and the Jews had to export Ernst Zindel to Canada and try him there because they couldn't try him in America. All right, because there's freedom of speech here in America. So they tried him in Canada.
How did they do that?
They kidnapped him. Mm-hmm. They just plain old kidnapped him. Okay.
Right. I wanted to make that point.
Yeah.
That's why I asked you that question, so people on the air would hear it.
Yeah. And so this is the extent the Jews will go to keep their hoax alive, to keep their hoax going. This hoax is the bedrock of Jewish tactics against the white race. That's how they play the victim. All right, so when this victimology, the hoax across the anity, or Shoahism, because they call it a Shoah, it's a religion. It's a religion mm-hmm. that you must believe, and if you dare not believe in the religion, you will be arrested and put in chains. Okay?
Well, they've got the Noahide laws.
Yeah.
They just need to start.
Yes.
And they've got guillotines and all that. They're going to behead people.
Yeah. Oh, we're ready for them.
Well.
Yeah, right. We're ready for them. Anyway,
they may get one or two, but once that news gets out, I mean, it's just going to be on.
Yeah. Well, what happened in the French Revolution was that the people who brought the guillotine in were the last ones to be executed by it. Okay. All right. So turnabout is fair play. Why Am I Thus says we must all write the German embassy in London and Canada to protest. Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to show the politicians in these countries who are basically shills of the Jews that we know what's going on. And don't try this again because the natives are getting restless. Frankenstein's castle is being ready to get marauded by the peasants with picks and shovels, right? That's what's getting ready to happen.
I'm sharpening the tines of my pitchfork.
Right.
And I get all my, brown peasant garb.
Right. Camo.
We'll go.
Camo peasant garb, right?
We'll charge the castle.
There you go. Frankenstein's, or maybe it's Weinstein's castle in this case.
Weinstein's.
Harvey Weinstein, Schweinstein.
And
okay.
He'll have all the little boys up there guarding it. Don't you hurt Harvey.
Yeah, right.
So nice.
That child molester. Yeah. Or Hillary.
He gives me candy bars.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Just before he molests us. Yeah, exactly. He's such a nice guy.
Oh.
All right. So anyway, this is where things are happening right now, this moment, folks. And if you can, write to the German embassy in London and or Canada and give them a piece of your mind. Tell them this is an outrage that a Canadian citizen cannot even attend a trial in Germany without being arrested for Holocaust denial. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. What, do they have a dictatorship over there, Pastor Steve?
I guess they do.
Yeah. Well, there was the American, so-called American army, military, is in fact still occupying Germany at the behest of the Jews. Okay. Because the Jews caused World War II.
You've got like an echo. Are you running? What are you running that you're getting?
Oh, it's possible. Well, I've got my laptop going.
You have turned the sound down on it.
Okay.
Make sure there's no sound because I'm hearing just a slight echo of you.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll.
That cleared it up. Whatever it was that you did, it cleared.
Very good. Okay. So let's get to today's topic. And we're going to start a series on the relationship between Hebrew and Sanskrit. And let me just make a general statement here. The vast majority of linguists have been under the illusion that the Hebrew language is not part of the Indo-Aryan tree. Okay? Every college and university teaches this falsehood, that Hebrew is not part of the Indo-Aryan language tree. And we in Identity have been arguing against this false premise. And the false premise is based on the fact that these scholars, so-called these academics, have believed the Jewish lie that they are Semites and that their language is the Shemitic language, and then the Arabs also speak a Shemitic language, and that they and their language constitutes a separate tree altogether, and that the Indo-Aryan tree is separate from that. That is the basic premise that all scholars of languages have been using for the last 100, 150 years or more. That is absolutely false. It has no truth whatsoever. It's simply based on the fact that all these academics believe this Jewish lie. So whenever they connect the Hebrew language, they think of hook-nosed, receding forehead, curly-haired, snake-eyed Edomites, who they falsely believe are Israelites, and say, well, this language, Hebrew, is the language of these people. And these people are so different from the Indo-Aryans that, it's obvious that there's got to be a difference. Since there's such a big difference between the peoples, there has to be a difference in their languages. Well, that's not true. The fact is that the Jews are Edomites. They spoke a version of Hebrew called Canaanite. And the Hebrew language was initially, and still is, part of the Indo-Aryan tree. Because we find, for example, and we've discussed this many times, that the Welsh speak nearly perfect Hebrew. And Welsh is not considered part of the so-called Shemitic tree, their false differentiation. So this differentiation between the so-called Semitic languages and the Indo-Aryan language is false, absolutely false. Over to you, your comments at this point.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to paste. There we go. I got it in the chat room. So that's it. I'm putting that link.
Okay.
Okay.
That's it.
So I've got two chat rooms going. this poor computer, boy.
Okay. So your comment on based on this false differentiation of the language trees.
Well. Now you've got Hebrew in the Indian language because of the dispersion. We were dispersed everywhere. Right. Got it in the German language. You got it in the American language. You got it in the English language. And
yes.
English and American are different. Whether people slightly.
Yeah.
But it's all over. We've got Hebrew in all the white nations, okay? In all the languages, we brought it with us.
Yes.
Now, it's slightly changed in some forms, but when we were sent into dispersion, we took a lot of stuff with us, including paganism.
That's right. We discussed that the last few shows, yes.
We brought our pagan beliefs, and we brought the Christmas tree thing with us into Europe, you know, which we were told clearly not to do.
That was too much fun, Pastor Steve. It's too much fun.
Well, we get bored on these long, cold winter days. We are a rebellious people.
Right.
And we're continuing to rebel. Now, some of the faithful are coming out, but some are still in rebellion, and they're part of a herd. They like to be comfortable. They don't want to rock the boat. It gives them social status.
Yeah, like Monica Schaefer. Yep.
Makes,
or Sylvia Stoltz.
It gives business contacts at the church. On and on and on.
Judeo-Christianity.
Judeo-Christianity groupthink. You got your echo back.
I turned the
laptop. It's a club, is what it is. Judeo-Christianity has become a club, a very fashionable club, and it's used to destroy our own people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so if you want to take this website here and post it in the chat room, it's veda.harekrishna.cz.
Okay.
/connections. But first, I'm going to quote, so people have an idea. And to follow up on what I just said, a general introduction I gave this, the vast majority of linguists believe this false bifurcation of the Indo-Aryan languages from the Semitic language. Well, first of all, the Jews aren't Semites, okay? Because the academics have believed this lie, that's why they make this artificial distinction. It's totally artificial based on the lie that the Jews are a Shemitic people or a Hebrew people or are Israelites, okay? And because and many of these scholars that we're quoting today are under that same delusion, nevertheless, they contradict this false separation that the academics today labor under, okay? So the vast majority of all these academics that includes Judeo-Christian scholars and includes secular scholars believe this lie that the Semitic languages are different from the Indo-Aryan languages, but based on the assumption that the Jews are Israelites and therefore Shemites and can't be Indo-Aryans. Okay? All right, so here I'm going to be quoting from a book entitled Anacalypsis, Part 1, An Attempt to Draw Aside the Veil of the Sinaitic Isis, or an Inquiry into the Origin of Languages, Nations, and Religions, by Godfrey Higgins. This is a 700-page tome, which is an analysis of migrations and languages, in which he argues that Sanskrit and Hebrew have tremendous connections, all right, from his premise. And Pastor Steve, I know you're going to relate to this. In my study of Hebrew also, a considerable time, I may say, was wasted on the Masoretic points, which at last I found were a mere invention of the modern Jews and not of the smallest use. No use whatsoever is what he's saying. Maybe you could explain to people what the Masoretic points is and how they came about.
They are added vowel points, and they were added by the Jewish scribes to change the names, to obfuscate, to deceive.
Well, change the meanings of words, too.
And they were used to hide. But their Bible, they're actually, their Torah that they read from, has no vowel points.
Right. It has no vowels, because the original Hebrew language had no vowels.
The Biblica Hebraica, which is the oldest, has no vowel points. Now, I have a Tanakh by the Jewish Publication Society. Its Hebrew is unchanged, but their English translation is an absolute abomination. Mm-hmm. But even most of the Jews don't read Hebrew. You got your rabbinic Jews and you've got your regular Jews. They are the cannon fodder. Your regular Jews are cannon fodder for the rabbinate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the higher up you go in the rabbinate, the worse it gets.
Yes.
So the Masoretic vowel points need to be discounted.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yes.
You have to get a good lexicon of the doctorate level, like the Brown Driver Briggs Gesenius lexicon. Don't just get the Brown Driver Briggs. You have to get the one that is Gesenius, has Gesenius with it.
Right.
To get the straight scoop. The other one is a cut down version. It's
okay.
like light beer, okay?
All right.
You don't
or near
okay.
Beer.
Well,
remember
okay.
Near beer?
Yeah. Oh, they still make that.
Oh, they do? Okay.
But you need to get the doctorate level study material.
Yeah.
And you really, if you're really going to get into it, you need to learn the languages.
Okay.
In my work that I've done, I have provided a lot of that in the pastor's version of my Torah, not the standard version. That's just English.
Right.
Okay. But the pastor's version has all the Hebrew on the opposite page. For whatever's on the left page, There's the Hebrew on the right page in English letters.
Right. Okay.
You have to learn the pronunciation. I mean, I can't convey that over the air in 30 seconds. It's
That's
not
right.
something
oh, yeah.
I can do.
No, it's a lifetime study. It's a lifetime study, yeah. So since you mentioned it, people, you can get a copy of Pastor Steve's translations. He's got the one for the general public, and then there's the pastor's version for people who really want to get deeply into the study of Hebrew. You can get, the regular version is $30, and the pastor's version is $35?
Right.
Okay. And you
now,
can order...
If it's outside the United States, I have to get shipping. I can't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's another...
The shipping is as much as the book.
It's $22.
I'm actually losing a little money at that price just for the printing. You have no idea what it takes to print that many pages.
The
Genesis alone is huge.
Yes, yes.
But the whole Torah is massive.
Right.
It's not...
So it's $30 for the regular version, $35 for the pastor's version, and you have to add $22 for overseas, okay?
$27
for overseas. So you can order it from anglo-saxonisrael.com. Go to the store at www.anglo-saxonisrael.com, and you just make a donation because it's not listed as one of the books for sale on that site, but just when you purchase it, just make a note and say this is for Pastor Steve's version, whichever version you want, and then make a donation in Steve's name, and then I'll make sure Steve gets the money and he'll make sure you get the book. Okay, that's how we have to do it until we get our merchant account set up at thanks to the Jews taking our PayPal link down off of American National Publishing. We can't sell books now via PayPal off of Eurofolk Radio. So, we've been victimized by them, too. In any case, let's get back to this book here, Anacalypsis by Godfrey Higgins. And you're going to relate to this, too, Pastor Steve.
Oh, I know.
Hebrew scholars have been accused of undue partiality to what is sneeringly called their favorite language by such as do not understand it. And this will probably be repeated towards me. In self-defense, I can only say that in my search for the origin of ancient science, okay, and he had to learn the languages, he's saying, I constantly found myself impeded by my ignorance of the Hebrew. And in order to remove this impediment, I applied myself to the study of it. I very early discovered that no translation of the ancient book of Genesis, either by Jew or Christian, could be depended on. What have we been telling people?
Yep.
That the Judeo-Christian versions of the scripture are tainted. That includes the King James Version, folks. All those KJV-only people out there. Okay. Everyone has the prejudices instilled into him in his youth to combat, or his prejudged dogma to support. But I can most truly say that I do not lie open to the latter charge, for there is scarcely a single opinion maintained in the following work which I held when I began it. In other words, his views of the matter have changed completely. He continues, in order to arrive at what I believe to be the truth, I have often been obliged to enter into very abstruse and difficult examinations of the meaning of Hebrew words.
Oh, yeah.
What
and
do we do?
A lot of them have dual meaning.
Right. And idiomatic meanings and slang meanings.
Idioms, and you have to learn. George Lamsa did a big study on Hebrew idioms. And there are so many of them. It's like down in the South, when something's really good, a lot of the boys say, man, that's fire. And
they're not talking
fire, yeah.
Fire, yeah. Fire and brimstone.
They don't mean it's actual fire.
Right.
It's just another way of saying, man, that's really good.
Yeah, that's right. Like fire water.
Well, yeah, whatever. Or a soup somebody makes. Or whatever. It's an idiom of the locale. Well,
right.
They had that in the Hebrew.
Yeah, of course they did.
And they changed over the years. You have to keep up on them.
That's right. That's right.
And you have no idea how much I've torn my hair out studying this stuff. Yeah. I mean, oh.
Well, this is what Higgins is saying.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
exactly what he's saying, right? So it's a difficult study. Anyway, this study has been a great advantage to me, as by this means I have been enabled to see everything which could be said on the respective points in dispute, and my conclusions may be considered as the summing up of the evidence on both sides. So he's saying, I've been very impartial, consider the arguments of both sides of the Jews, the Judeo-Christians, and everybody else. Okay. And so, as the result of my inquiries will sometimes depend upon the meaning of the words, well, of course, the meanings of the words are paramount, the subjects of these discussions, I have found it necessary to enter in several instances into a close and critical examination of their meaning. Okay. And yep. I can say, Pastor Steve, that the modern Judeo-Christians and the modern Jews have no interest in determining the true meanings of the Hebrew and Greek words. They're very comfortable to stand pat with their current meanings because they employ these to deceive people.
Well, Judeo-Christians rely on their pastor who was up there feeding them their particular brand of malarkey. Mm-hmm. And the Jews rely on their rabbis to give them advice, and the rabbis have their own little cabal, and they have their agenda, and they use the common Jew, because they have no love for their own people. They use the common Jew as cannon fodder, and they tell them whatever they want them to hear. So yeah. It's a mirror image, the Judeo-Christian preachers and the Kabbalistic rabbis.
Yes.
So they're lying. The higher ups are lying on both sides.
Yep. Yeah, the Jews are lying, and the Judeo-Christians are imitating the Jews and promoting the Jewish lies, which is the same.
Well, they're parroting what the rabbis are saying.
Right. And the linguists, the academics, are doing exactly the same thing. Okay. So
some of them get killed.
Right. Or they lose tenure if they don't toe the line. Yeah.
They sure do.
Right. So now we're going to, in this series, prove conclusively that this bifurcation of the Indo-Aryan tree of language and the Semitic tree of language is false. That it's a majorly false construct that they should stop teaching it because it's not true. Okay.
Well, first of all, yeah. the premise that they are putting forth here is that the modern Indians of the country of it, I'm not talking about American Indians, I'm talking that's a misnomer as well. The people of India are the Hebrew people. That's false. They are not. They don't mm-hmm. look anything like the Hebrew. They're small. They don't have the, some of them, a lot of them do have, were mixed and they have kinky hair.
Right.
But a lot of them are just straight black hair and they're very greasy.
Greasy. I like the way you pronounce it.
Greasy. Yeah. Well, they're greasy. Yeah. They grease themselves up
right.
like the Mexicans do. Mexicans, that's why they call them greasers.
That's right.
Well, hey, look, call a spade a spade. Let's quit pussyfooting around with all these semantics.
Yeah.
And just tell it like it is. I mean, I'm not known for wishy-washying. I put it right out there.
Right.
Which makes me much beloved among certain segments of right. the people.
Right. Yeah.
But, you see some influence there, but it doesn't mean that they're Hebrews. Anything that mixes with a Hebrew negates the Hebrew. Now they're saying Jews. Well, the Jews were not banished and dispersed, the Hebrews were, the Israelite people, not right. the Jews.
Exactly.
And they can't get this difference between Jew and
Israelite.
Well,
the Jews even deny the existence of the so-called lost tribes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to claim the birthright for themselves, and they're not even Israelites.
They're not. They're Most Edomites.
Of them, the Sephardim have a very faint connection, but the Ashkenaz
yes.
have none.
Absolutely none.
And
yes.
Ashkenaz outnumber the Sephardim by, oh man, well,
9 or 10 to 1. Yeah,
9 or 10 to 1.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's all lies, lies, lies. They are of their father, the devil, and their father's works they do. He was a father of lies from the beginning.
Amen.
So why would his descendants yeah. be any different?
Why should they? Yes. But lying.
Our people just blindly go along with this because mm-hmm. researching it for themselves is too much like work.
It's too much trouble.
And our people are not only stiff-necked, but they are lazy.
Right. Interrupts their golfing schedule. Right?
Or
right.
Watch
they go to church
day.
On
I
Sunday
went, I
and sneak out
church.
For a round of golf.
I went to a church down here, and they would make sure to cut the service off right in the middle of the sermon if UK was playing a basketball game.
Oh, really? Wow.
They would cut.
That's the University of Kentucky, well, not the United Kingdom.
the UK's playing, everybody go home.
Yeah. Amazing.
And they would all troop out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely amazing.
Cut
wow.
church service off.
That's true faith, Pastor Steve. True faith.
Basketball game.
back
well, we bleed
You're not
blue.
Pronouncing it
yeah,
right.
Big blue. It's we back bleed, at ball. We bleed blue, man. We're all you big blue fans.
Right. Okay. All right. So a couple more brief comments here from Godfrey Higgins. And this is a very difficult read because he goes into great detail into analyzing the etymology, that is the development yeah. of words. From
He's
the,
very
from,
smart. That's
yeah.
what you need to do.
It's a 700-page book.
Well,
okay, and your book is not an easy read either because it's word book. Studies.
Well,
all right,
is. That,
which we'll get into today. So he concludes the letters after talking about you know how difficult and a close an examination of the words must be undertaken. He says this. The letters of the old synagogue Hebrew language are nearly the same as the English, only in a different form. And I would simply add from Professor Tyndale, who was the first person to have a direct translation from the Hebrew into the English of the Old Testament. He said, and I quote, "The properties of the Hebrew tongue agreeth 1,000 times more with the English than with the Latin. The manner of speaking is in both one, or that is the same, so that in 1,000 places there needs not but to translate the Hebrew word for word into English. Why? Because the syntax is the same." Now, how is it possible, Pastor Steve, for Hebrew and English to have exactly the same syntax if one is not derived from the other?
All right, now then you have the German, and the German agrees. If you say I am going to the store in English, mm-hmm. it is to the store I am going,
right?
In the German and the Hebrew.
Okay.
So the German mirrors the Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
More so than the English. Now, you have other things in the English that mirror the Hebrew and the German because there's a great deal in American English with German. We have a lot of German language in our language here.
Yes, absolutely.
Not so in the British Isles.
Okay, interesting.
our English is different than the British English.
Yes. Okay. All right. So what we see here is, and the fact is, both German and English derive from Old Anglo-Saxon, which is directly derived from the Hebrew. Okay. So that would explain, you know, the difference in syntax, common, you know, differences between German and American English. All right, but they can both be traced back to Hebrew. That's the major point. Okay, so let's go now to the first article. I think that we posted in the link here. And this is Hebrews and Vedic Brahmins. Well,
I posted that in there as well.
The Hare Krishna, yeah.
All right, I was on the connection between the languages, but I'll
okay.
Click, and now I'm right there, Vedic okay. Knowledge Online.
All right. Since you're the Hebrew expert, I'll go ahead and read, and then you jump in and comment wherever you feel necessary, okay?
So all right. Notice the similarity between Brahma and Abraham.
Right.
All right.
And now let me just tell people.
And we have a post in the chat room from Swamp Pop. Swamp Fox, I know the Indians of the upper caste have white features, just darker skin.
Yes.
That is true.
Uh-huh. And they're originally pure white.
And they keep their dark skin.
Caste. Right.
But they keep themselves separate from the real...
The riffraff.
The darkies.
Yes.
They are supremacists right there.
They sure are
closer to the Hebrew than the others, but yet they're mixed, so they're disqualified.
Yes. And now everybody listening should understand that the false dichotomy between Hebrew and Aryan, that the two are not equal, that's a false teaching. The fact is, you put the word Hebrew down and the word Aryan down, and you put an equal sign between the two, then you have the truth. The Jews are not Hebrews, they're not Shemites, they're not Israelites, and the Aryans and the Hebrews are the same race.
They're the noble people chosen by Yahweh.
Yes, amen. Okay, Hebrews and Vedic Brahmins by Dr. Samar Abbas. He's not an Aryan, he's a Hindu scholar. And even he has noticed a connection between the Hebrews and the Brahmins. Okay? So it's always good to have someone outside of our faith, outside of our ideology and theology, to confirm what we teach. That means we're not blowing smoke. There's other people, even on the other side, who agree with us. And this is published in Aligarh, India. Uh-huh. Editorial, July 14th. In 1979, the Oriental Institute at Baroda published a paper entitled, quote, "The Hebrews belong to a branch of the Vedic Aryans." Hello?
Well, he's trying to put them first.
Okay.
That's where the Hebrews came from. That's incorrect.
It's actually the other way around, but he's making the linguistic connection. He's making
right,
and that's the important point, okay? And, of course, all of these authors, all of these academics begin with the premise that, they understood the Jews to be the Shemites and Hebrews and that the Aryans are not, okay? They're a different species, a different race. And, you know, if that's the case, why are the languages so identical? For another example, Pastor Steve. The academics routinely categorize the Phoenicians as Aryans and the Semites as Jews. But the Phoenician language and Hebrew are identical. So how could these people of two different races...
Well, pretty much Welsh and Hebrew are identical.
That's right.
Chew on that one for a while.
Right. Right. But these matters, these facts that we're discussing, are ignored by academia routinely. So, but some of these academics disagree with the mainstream and agree with us. So let's continue. I mean, this is an amazing statement for an academic linguist. The Hebrews belong to a branch of the Vedic Aryans. Yeah, you're correct. It's actually the other way. The Aryans are a branch of the Hebrews. That's really what's going on. He continues. This was a follow-up to a previous article on the same topic published by the same author, Professor Madan Mohan Shukla, in the Viveshvaranand Indological Journal in 1976. The basic thesis of these papers is that the Hebrews represent an offshoot of Vedic Brahmins, and you're correct, it's actually the other way around. It may be instructive to review Shukla's papers as they serve to illustrate the common origin of, and they use the word Jews, but really it's Hebrews, and I'll just make the correction as I go through, the common origin of the Hebrews and Brahmins. As Shukla's papers are very difficult to obtain, wonder why that is, Pastor Steve, both within and outside of India, and are virtually out of reach for laypersons, I am reproducing extensive tracts from them for reference purposes. Now, before you comment, let me just say that this type of scholarship, which connects Hebrew and Indo-Aryan languages, in this case Sanskrit, are very difficult to obtain because they have been suppressed. Over to you. Hello? Did I lose you, Pastor Steve?
Oh, no, I turned my mic off so there would be no noise. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They suppress a lot of our stuff. That's why I print independently instead of going through a publisher.
Yes.
To do my work, because it would be tampered with, for one thing. It would be suppressed. Oh, we're out of them.
Yeah, right. Not that we have any.
we'll let you know when they're back in stock.
Yes, right.
Please
don't call us. We'll call
please
you.
Please hold your breath until then.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Okay.
But I could not find satisfaction out in the commercial world to have any of my stuff printed, so I just said, look, I'm going to have to do it myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, with you helping me, I am.
Well, I had to do the same thing with The Great Impersonation. There's no mainstream outlet with the publish a work condemning the Jews as false.
Well, we'll look at what's happened with Andy Hitchcock.
Yes, right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah,
David James Music.
Yeah.
That nobody will handle it.
We're all under attack, because we tell the truth about the Jews. You can't have that, okay? All right, under vocabulary, first heading. One of Shukla's strong points is the considerable vocabulary shared by the Hebrew and Sanskrit. Surprise, surprise, folks. So if they're two markedly different trees and totally unrelated, why do Hebrew and Sanskrit share a considerable vocabulary? So right here, the lie is being exposed. Indeed, M.M. Shukla has concentrated on providing a large list of words which are common to Hebrew and Sanskrit. Thus,
as the Hebrews moved through, they left their imprint on the local peoples. The same way when we finally all moved up into Europe, we left our imprint on the peoples up there. You know, there were Aryan people in Europe.
Yes. Well, the whole world is familiar with the expression okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the world uses okay.
Means because, all correct.
That's right. Because English has made that expression so popular. And so now everybody uses it. So what the origin of that expression? It's English. Okay? Mm-hmm. And people who don't study the matter, they would say, this expression, we Germans use it. We French use it. Where did that expression come from? Well, it came from the Americans who speak American English, right? Some examples here.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. The word sva.
Actually, it was a shipboard term for sailors.
Okay.
You have to do this, do that. Oh, correct, sir.
Okay.
That's where it came from.
Very good. Very good.
The sailor term.
Yeah, there's a lot of terminology that sailors use that has, you know, worked its way into common usage in English, and people don't even realize that it's sailor's usage. Okay? So, in any case, the word sva means heaven or paradise in Sanskrit. The word written as svam may assume the form samyim, which means sky and or heaven in Hebrew. What's your comment on this?
Actually, it is shamayim.
Shamayim. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the Sanskrit dropped the M between the S and the A and inserted a V. Okay. But they're definitely connected. So here we see right away in the word heaven, which is a very common word in both Sanskrit and Hebrew.
It means sky. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean heaven. That's a church term.
That's a church term. Sure it is. And that is how the terminology brought into the modern Judeo-Christian terminology becomes skewed. It's simply in those days, you're saying in Hebrew, it simply means sky.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't mean heaven. Although
yeah, he is the god of the sky. That's
okay.
El Shamayim.
And since
El HaShamayim.
And since the kingdom of heaven is within you, not out
That's
there
correct.
In the sky, that equation made by the Judeo-Christians falsely conveys that God is out there somewhere instead of in our hearts. Okay. Continuing. While it may become Asva under, or actually Ashva, I think the Sanskrit retain, as does German, and I think the Hebrew, the S is actually pronounced like an SH.
Ashva.
Ashva. As the German.
Ashwa.
Yeah.
Because he's translating the wa as a vav.
Okay. Yeah, well, he's a Sanskrit scholar, so, you know, he may be lacking in the Hebrew, but nevertheless, he's showing the convergence of meaning with slight difference in pronunciation. Okay?
Yes.
And this is what happens to all languages as the language migrates from one nation to another. Perfectly understandable. Even here...
Well, the dialects here in the United States differ from south to north, east to west.
That's right.
You have local colloquialisms. Well, that happened over...
When we
were migrating around before we came over to this continent years ago.
Yes.
I mean, we're the same people.
Right.
But we change over time.
Mm-hmm.
The Swedes, Michael Swede, boom. He is an Aryan. He is a Hebrew. He is an Israelite.
And he's not
his
a Jew.
Native his native language is Swedish. Our native language is American English.
Yes.
But we are also Aryans. We are also Hebrews. We are also Israelites.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because I was listening to your show yesterday and David James yesterday, and you make fun of your own dialect because I love the way you pronounce far, right?
Far.
Far.
Yeah.
And then...
I'm Southern. Right? I make no bones about my Southern roots that I
And David pronounces it in his Boston accent as fire, right, without hardly pronouncing the R at all. And I'm Midwestern English, which is the true, proper, correct English, folks. Fire. Okay. But that just shows you the difference in the pronunciations of three different areas of the United States.
You Yankees just feel you're so hot.
You are so superior. So anyway, it's common. In German, for example, the High German and the Low German. They can barely understand each other.
Unterdeutsch, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They can barely understand each other.
Well, Unterdeutsch it has virtually disappeared.
Yes, virtually.
It's almost all Hochdeutsch.
Mm-hmm. High German, yes. Well, that's the Low German never had the scholarly, backing, you know, in books. That was just a local dialect spoken by half the German people, right? But very few books were ever written in that language, so because it didn't have the formal grammatical structure and the books written about it. But, and even in English, the formal dictionaries, who was the British scholar who wrote the first dictionary, as like the 1700s before English was actually codified. Pronunciation is normalized, definitions recorded, et cetera, et cetera. It's only in the last 300 years.
Punctuation.
Yeah, punctuation. It's only, and even as I pointed out to Michael Swede last weekend, he pronounces a J as a Y. Well, that's the original pronunciation of the English-speaking world. It didn't.
Right. There was no J.
There was no J. There was no J in our language.
Right.
Okay. So you can see how English itself has changed in the last few hundred years. So if there's these minor deviations between Sanskrit and Hebrew and between Hebrew and English, that's the explanation. Okay. Because languages, they change over time. So he continues. Mm-hmm. While it may become this word sva or shva, may become ashva under the influence of the principle of vowelization. So,
correct.
Okay, so depending on which vowel you use after the sh sound, it could be she, sha, shem, and the sh will maybe become sem, with the e following instead of the a. You know, just from pronunciational usage. Okay? And this is all he's saying. The derivation ashva or ashua may change to, hold on to your hats, folks, Yahshua, which is nearer to a Hebrew word, namely Yahshua, salvation. Wow.
Well, see, he spelled it wrong.
Okay, yeah, he's using his...
Yahshua, Shua is salvation.
Right. Okay.
Which is closer to the shva.
Right.
Okay. And when you add yah to it, that is the epithet. That's number 3050 in your Strong's Concordance. That's the epithet, the short form for Yahweh.
Amen.
And it means Yahweh is salvation. Yah. Mm-hmm.
Shua.
Shua. And that Amen. Is the name of our Redeemer.
Right. And at this point, it bears mentioning, although we've talked about this many times, that the English Jesus has no linguistic connection at all to Yahshua in either the Hebrew or the Aramaic. The word Jesus is simply an attempt to reproduce the pronunciation without any attempt to keep the meaning of the Hebrew word Yahshua.
And it comes from the Greek,
mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Right. And
Son of Zeus.
Oh, no, let's not go there.
That's what it is. They didn't have a word for Yahweh, so that Zeus, the great God.
Jesus. So this
Son
is a,
of Zeus.
That's a Greek construction. It's not a Hebrew construction. Or even, it's a Greek construction because, only in the English, somebody in the chat room had mentioned that only in English does the word son, S-U-N, have the same pronunciation as son, S-O-N. And so you can't assume that the Hebrews worship the son, S-U-N. that connection only comes about in English. It does not come about in any other language. So it's not true that Jesus means praise Zeus. That's a false accusation against language. Okay, totally false accusation. In any case, it may be mentioned that Appa is a Marathi word. The derivation of Appa may further change to Abba, which is a Hebrew word.
Father.
Oh, father. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, are you getting the picture, folks, that the Sanskrit and Hebrew are intimately connected and not...
It's a more personal term, Abba.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extension of the word Ab. Mm-hmm. The word Mo, Ab, of my father.
Yeah, okay.
Moab.
David James just sent me a message that in French, Jesus means I am. In French. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the meaning of the I am, Yahweh.
That's right.
I am. So the French retains the original meaning of the word Yahweh.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
But you don't get this in Swahili. You don't get this in any other non-Indo-Aryan, and Hebrew is an Indo-Aryan language, folks. Or, you know, let's just cut out the India. It's an Aryan, the Hebrew Aryan language. That's what we need to start saying, the Hebrew Aryan languages. Because Hebrew is the common root of all of them, even Sanskrit.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And Paleo Hebrew, the old Hebrew, is not like modern Hebrew at all, which has been Jewized.
Right, Judaized version.
And they don't actually speak Hebrew. They speak Yiddish.
Yes.
Which is a mongrel language, like they are a mongrel people.
It comes from Ashkenaz.
Yeah.
The Khazars.
It's got German in it. It's got Russian in it.
It's got Polish.
All kinds of stuff. They are Mutts from all over the place.
Right.
And that's what their language is.
That's the country they come from, all over the place.
it's Mutt speak.
Yes, there you go. Very good. Yeah, Yiddish is Mutt speak. Outstanding. Okay, so now let us consider the root word Shavas. It may change first to Vash, and thence to Bas or Bes, which is a Hebrew word, though with a different meaning, i.e. daughter.
Now that's Bat, B-A-T-H.
Okay, or Bath.
He's got that wrong.
Beth. Okay, yeah, he's not a Hebrew scholar. He's just pointing out that there's similarities.
He sure is not.
Yeah, but he's a Vedic scholar.
This is which is a Hebrew word, and it's Bat, B-A-T-H.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth is a common Hebrew word, and Mary's cousin was named Elizabeth. Beth means house, actually. In this case,
Bait.
Okay, that's a different. All right, so Beth or Bath is daughter.
Right.
Bathsheba. David and Bathsheba.
The daughter of Sheba.
Okay,
yeah,
very good.
Sheba.
Very good. Okay. So, let's continue. He also suggests that Surios gave rise to Kurios, or Kur. Shukla notes that Abru and Uparohita exist in Persian and in Avadi Hindi, distinct from Sanskrit Bru and Purohita. Describing the process of vowelization, he notes, quote, the Punjabis would pronounce the words Station, Putra, and Krishna, Satation, Putar, and Kishan, respectively. Building upon this, he writes, the word Yoashava may be transformed into Yoasaf, from which the derivation of the word Joseph is a simple matter. I would agree with you, it's the other way around.
Right.
Okay. Joseph preceded Yoasava.
He is trying to shift the importance to his own people.
That's right, his own language, okay? Which is understandable.
This is definitely written with prejudice. And just
with
prejudice. It's on the internet doesn't mean it's 100%.
Well, that's why we're going through this critically, so that we can see that the important point is he is verifying for us the connection between Hebrew and Sanskrit, which everybody else in the world practically denies. Okay? So
of
he's
course.
Showing the similarities, but prejudice...
It's not financially beneficial to admit it.
That's right. All right.
Well,
okay.
that's their power. Their power is money.
Right. So
and
he
when
connects.
All the money goes,
oh, for
when
sure.
all the money goes and the financial systems crash, they're going to crash.
Yes.
There's no fear that they will be able to hold over people at that point.
Yes. So he connects the Indo-Aryan Yayashva with Joseph. All right. The two words are directly related, folks. They're not from separate language trees. Continuing in this line, he notes Adam. This word seems to have been derived from, been derived from the Sanskrit word adityam, from the Vedic pronunciation of this word as adityam. Okay, so actually the other way around, that the Sanskrit adityam comes from the Hebrew Adam.
Okay, and then there is a pronunciation problem.
Mm-hmm.
Most people in the English say Adam.
Right.
It is not an A, it's an A.
Mm-hmm.
Adam.
Yeah. And this is retained by the Vedic pronunciation, that A, okay? Adityam. In addition, the meaning of the root word as in Sanskrit is to eat and to enjoy or to be merry. Hence, if we pronounce the term upashana as upashana, then it would mean eating before God. And the ya is in the last syllable here, but the y has been dropped. Although sometimes they have an umlaut over the n, which makes it ya, okay? So the ya is retained in many of the Sanskrit words. Eating before God and being merry before God. Another striking similarity exists with regard to the script. Now, the Hebrew script, like those of the Arabic and Kaiti, does not use the word signs to indicate the pronunciation of its consonants. Okay?
Okay, that upasana, and it would be the Pesach in Hebrew, which is Passover or the sacrifice.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And you eat the Passover before Yahweh.
Yes, there you go.
So that they don't have that in here. So right. The Hebrew comes first.
The Hebrew Pesach comes first. Yeah, you can see that the meaning of the word in Hebrew is very exact, and you can see that the Sanskrit is mimicking the Hebrew, not the other way around. Okay?
Right. They've twisted the meaning of the word a little bit.
Sure.
But you eat the Passover before Yahweh. And that means in front of Yahweh, celebrating the Passover as we do.
Right. Now, it's interesting.
You eat it all. You leave nothing to the morning.
Right.
You eat whatever you put on that table. If you don't eat it, you got to burn it.
Right.
We have never burnt anything. We leave, it's clean plate time.
Yes.
When we have that Passover, oh, that's so much fun.
Right. Okay, priesthood. Now, it's interesting, from another article, which we'll reference later, it was stated that it was the Brahmins who introduced animal sacrifice into Indian culture. Well, we know that Abraham sent the sons of Keturah out to the east because he did not want them to interfere with Isaac's inheritance. And he did the same to the Ishmaelites. He sent them out of his presence so that they would not interfere with Isaac's inheritance.
And they went to the west.
They went to the west. The Keturahites went to the east. Well, some of them wound up in India, folks. They wound up in India. They're the ones
sure
who
did.
Are called, they're called Brahmins because they call themselves after Abraham. It is very common in the derivation of from Hebrew to English to drop the preceding vowel, as in Isaac. We became known as Saxons, Saka. All right,
they dropped
the
sake.
Okay, so it would be common to drop the initial vowel if a word begins with a vowel, just drop it, and then pronounce the rest of the word for short. This is very common in all languages. Okay,
the sons of Isaac.
That's right, and they dropped the I, and they became known as the Saxons, sons of Isaac.
And the pronunciation has changed from the Hebrew to the English. It's Yitzhak.
Mm-hmm.
In
yes.
Hebrew and Isaac,
yeah,
it changed to the
yeah.
English.
And I so mean,
the,
in
the metamorphosis of the languages.
Yes. So we see the same thing happened with the word Abraham among the Brahmins as Isaac among the Saxons. They simply dropped the first vowel.
Right. Okay?
All right, priesthood. One of the strongest points for a common Brahmin-Jewish origin. Now, this is a different, a common Brahmin, he says Jewish, meaning Hebrew. A common Brahmin-Hebrew origin is the fact that in both communities have been endogamous priests from the earliest times of their recorded history. Well, I think all of these sacrifices were started by the Hebrews and then adopted by the Indo-Aryans, not vice versa. Quote, chosen people of God, it may also be observed in this respect that the Hebrews, as well as their Indian counterparts, the Brahmins, consider themselves as the chosen people of God.
All right, now, let's go to the Hebrew. You got Brahmin. In Hebrew, it would be Abramin, I-Y-N-S. Abramin, that would be people of Abraham.
Uh-huh.
So they've dropped the Y. They call it Brahmins.
Uh-huh.
There's your connection.
Very good. Very good. And this author is basically verifying our thesis that the Hebrew and the Indo-Aryan are deeply connected. But he, you know, because he's an Indian scholar, he puts the Indo-Aryan or Sanskrit first, and then tries to argue that the Hebrew evolved from the Sanskrit. That's not possible. Hebrew came first, just as Hebrew became before Phoenician. The academics get that wrong, too.
It evolved over the centuries.
Yes, yes. And then he says, the Hebrews started their corporate career in history as a kingdom of priests, quoting Exodus 19:6. Thank you very much. Likewise, the Brahmins have also been a community of priests since the dawn of their history. And as I just said, it was the Brahmins who introduced animal sacrifice into Indian culture. Why? They got it from their father, Abraham.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The colonialists were the first to notice that, bringing us up to date, the British colonialists he's talking about here, not the Hebrews. The word Hebrew means colonist. The colonialists were the first to notice the similarity between Brahmins and Hebrews. Imagine that. Now, why has this information been suppressed? Namely,
actually, Hebrews is Ibrim, which means of Eber.
Right.
And Eber E-B-E-R came... Eber, Ibrim. That
Hebrew.
Is the people of Eber.
And he was a real person. It's not
he
just a linguistic.
He was a real person.
That's right.
Okay.
Descendant of Noah.
From descendant.
Of Shem.
Right.
Okay. This is not fictitious stuff, folks. All these similarities in language were conveyed by real people.
Well, that's why I'm doing Jasher. I know David James touches on Jasher, and he pulls out a lot of the religious points, but I'm going word for word on the thing and pointing out with all my notes. I mean, my copy of Jasher is over 20 years old.
Yes.
It was printed in 1990.
Right.
Okay. And that poor thing is worked over.
Right, right. Now get this.
We're both working in Jasher.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're hitting different points.
Sure.
So when he's talking on Jasher, you need to listen closely to David James, because you're going to get a different set of information than you're going to get from me.
Right. Well, he's more historical, but you're doing word studies. You're doing the word studies.
Well, he is just brilliant on a lot of his takes.
Mm-hmm.
And I never miss one of his shows.
Right.
And we sort of feed off one another. He gives ideas out there. And he has insights that perhaps I don't have.
Sure. That's so why we're all here together.
I never miss. It's a team effort.
That's right. That's right.
Same way with Pastor Dan. Pastor Dan comes up with stuff that just knocks my socks off and dares my shoes to move.
So yeah, that's right.
All of us are, we're hitting all of them hard.
No wonder you got cold feet.
Well, I don't. I have these marvelous slippers.
All right. Okay.
It's a team effort, and the Father reveals different things to each one of us.
That's right.
He's using all of us.
Now, get this. Now, if the similarity between Abraham and Brahmin, and you, I think you're right, there might be even Eber connection here as well.
Eber,
okay. Uh-huh. Namely, that Brahma not only corresponds with Abraham, but that his consort, Sarasvati, corresponds to, who do you guess, Pastor Steve?
Sarah. And originally it was Sarai.
Yes, it was Sarai. Now, it's possible that
the
Keturites
were sent... Abraham's name was Abram, not Abraham.
That's right.
He changed his name when he chose him, and it means father of the people. He is the forefather.
Right. And I believe that the Keturites were sent east before... possibly before Abraham's name was changed, and possibly before Sarah's name was changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that they would not have that construction in Sanskrit because it occurred later. Okay, all right. Now biblical figures with about 10 minutes left. Citing his own work, The Holy Bible, a source book of ancient Indian history, a paper submitted to All Indian Oriental Conference, 1976, held at Darwar, he notes that, quote, "We have already tried to equate Brahma, Sarasvati, Manu, and Bali with the biblical Abraham, Sarah, Noah, and Peleg."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our ancestors got around, Pastor Steve.
Right, and again, they've got Jewish in here.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
Shukla holds that the Jewish Laban, no, the Israelite.
Laban. Well, actually, he wasn't an Israelite. He was a Hebrew.
He wasn't an Israelite, no, because there was no Israel at that time.
Right. He was a Hebrew.
The Hebrew
Laban. And the Brahmanic Lavana coincide. Let me quote. "It is noteworthy to note in the above context that the sister of Lavana in the Indian side becomes the daughter of Laban in the biblical account." It's actually, again, the other way around. It may also be mentioned in this respect that while Sarasvati is said to be the daughter of Brahma in accordance with the Indian tradition, her biblical counterpart, Sarai, and here he uses the exact term, Sarai, S-A-R-A-I, has been described as the sister of Abraham. Well, that's what she was, okay? That's what the Bible says. In this context, we would like to remind our readers of a previous discussion of Shvas, the root word of the Sanskrit Savasar, sister, which becomes best to mean daughter in the Hebrew language. Your comment here.
It would be Beth or Bat. Bat. B-A-T-H.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It means child of.
Right.
Bat is the female.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's feminine.
Now,
so
remember.
Bat Abraham.
Yes.
Daughter of Abraham.
Yeah. Now, remember, he's arguing for the Hebrew derivation from Sanskrit. We're arguing the other way around, but nevertheless, the point being that the two languages are related. They're absolutely related, thus putting the lie to the false division of the Indo-Aryan languages from the Hebrew.
Wow.
Okay. Either way you look at it, that myth is exploded.
I want to get this next paragraph. I've
got
to correct this.
Go ahead.
"Equally striking is Shukla's derivation of Mary from Matri. The words Mary and Mariam could be derived from a Sanskrit word mater, meaning mother. All right. Well, it's not Mary, and it's not Matri, and it's not Mariam. It's Miriam.
Right. Miriam. That's close enough.
M-I-R-Y-A-M.
Miriam. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter of Yah.
And so he's got, and he's putting the Sanskrit first.
That's right.
Instead of the Hebrew.
That's right. That's right. We should go have a talk with this guy.
All these words are deriving from the Hebrew, not the Hebrew deriving from
the Sanskrit.
Their Sanskrit.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So we're only a few minutes out here. We got about 4 minutes, four or five.
Right.
Yeah.
So the case, however, is proven that the Sanskrit and the Hebrew are intimately connected and cannot be artificially separated as the academic world has done. And and this artificial separation was caused by the Jews, who insisted that they are the only Hebrews/Semites/Israelites in the world, okay? And because they're obviously not Aryans, the academics falsely concluded that the Hebrew language can't be an Aryan language. Well, we're proving the opposite, folks.
Well, now, when the Hebrews migrated, they founded a lot of this stuff. These were just bloody wogs living in the bushes until the Hebrews got there and civilized them, basically. And a lot of their culture and a lot of their language and a lot of their knowledge came from our people.
Amen.
The same way with the white people today, you don't see any black civilizations. If left to their own, they'd be back eating one another within 50 years. They're doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wherever they live over here, everything falls apart. It is time for the white people to just grit their teeth and admit these other peoples are not us.
Right.
You
these Jews aren't Israelites. Yes.
You cannot make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. We've tried. We've given them everything. We've done everything to them. And it's like the island of Dr. Moreau.
Right.
He was
a Jew.
Left alone, they will revert. They will revert to type. And they are doing that. And
right.
Then we pay the price where they're proliferated. We get the violence put on us by the people we've tried to help. They don't appreciate it.
That's right.
They hate us. And they're killing us.
And there's no point in us trying to convert them because they can't become us.
I wish all the liberals would move into the hood.
Yeah, right.
Get out of your nice.
Get a dose of liberalism. Yeah.
Get out of your nice white neighborhood and go live with them for a year. And then come back and I make a bet you're not liberal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Practice what you preach for
Put
once
your
in your
life. Put your money where your mouth is. Move into the hood.
Yes.
And fix up a house. And then you have to be killing cockroaches coming from next door all the time.
Yes.
So I'm sick of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the long and the short of it, what we can glean from an article like this, even though it is Sanskrit philology, arguing that the Hebrew derives from the Sanskrit, it's clearly the other way around. And whatever his agenda is, maybe he's sincere in what he's saying, but it's very obvious that these Sanskrit words come from the Hebrew because Abraham was a Hebrew, right?
That's right.
And that the Abraham.
He's doing reverse psychology.
It's reverse psychology, yes. But nevertheless, the value of a work like this shows that the lie that the Sanskrit and the Hebrew are unrelated languages is a lie. And that lie needs to be exposed.
The Hebrew bled over into their local
That's
culture.
Right. Because
it's time to sign off and play the bumper music. I hate to watch the clock, brother, but
because the sons of Abraham migrated to India, folks. That's what happened, and that's how the Indo-Aryan languages came about, especially Sanskrit. Thanks for listening. Yep. We'll talk about Germanic and other relations between Hebrew and Sanskrit next time. This is a fascinating subject, and it needs to be understood. All right? Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time, everybody.
See y'all later. Shalom aleichem.